Get ready for the 2023 Crop Consultant Conference in Visalia, California on September 27th and 28th, hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and Western Region Certified Crop Advisors. This two-day event will feature a combined 44 hours of live and online continuing education units for attendees in the heart of California, a trade show, first-class dining, entertainment, and a mixer. Come join CCAs, PCAs, growers, and industry professionals at the Visalia Convention Center to hear from researchers and colleagues on the latest in agriculture. Registration is now open at progressivecrop.com/conference.
AgroPlante is the leading manufacturer in specialty products. AgroPlante formulates products that rise to the challenge of today's growing conditions. Saline and sodic soils reduce crop yield and cause significant crop losses. AgroPlante developed Cation EX5 Plus with growers in mind to manage soil salinity. With multiple years of research, Cation EX5 Plus has proven to be an excellent source of calcium and an effective soil salinity manager. Run it through drip irrigation without any issues. Simplify your application method with innovative and efficient formulations. Alleviate salinity stress with Cation EX5 Plus. AgroPlante, imagination, innovation, science in action.
Foodiverse and Taylor Farms have announced an agreement where U.S.-based Taylor Farms will be a new shareholder in the Spanish Foodiverse Group. Both companies will become partners through a capital increase that will provide Taylor Farms a significant share in Foodiverse's capital. The transaction, which is expected to close in the upcoming weeks, is currently awaiting ratification by the Spanish National Markets and Competition Commission and is subject to necessary bank regulatory approvals and other customary closing conditions. Taylor Farms' entry as Foodiverse's shareholder will enable the collaboration and creation of synergies, as well as the exchange of best practices with both market leaders' commitment to sustainability, quality, innovation, and food safety. Moreover, it will promote their continuous growth in the development of new, innovative, fresh, and healthy products tailored to meet the demands of consumers. Foodiverse's multinational operations in Spain, Germany, Switzerland, and Italy will continue to be managed by the Foodiverse team and its president, Joaquin Ballester, and CEO, Jesus Gomez. According to company information, Taylor Farms is a North American producer of salads and healthy fresh foods with production facilities across the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. They are headquartered in Salinas. As the avocado industry continues to boom in sales and pop culture, Fresh Avocados London Today, a leading science-based resource founded by the Haas Avocado Board, celebrates its 10th anniversary with news of continued big strides in elevating positive awareness for the health benefits of avocados, a proven driver for stimulating demand in the U.S. Founded in 2013, London Today has focused on reducing purchase barriers by telling avocados' nutrition story, starting with the benefits of good fats amidst a challenging landscape of contradictory policy opinions. As registered dietitians are amongst the most influential health professionals when it comes to nutrition, it is especially exciting to see that in the 2023 HAB tracking study analyzing health professionals' attitudes and awareness, 80% of surveyed registered dietitians now recommend avocados as a good source of fat to their clients, reflecting a 25% increase since 2013. Love One Today is increasingly recognized as a leading source of the healthiest reasons and tastiest ways to enjoy avocados. The resource provides a robust pipeline for free recipes, educational handouts, and easy-to-follow meal plans. You can find more on loveonetoday.com. The California Department of Food and Agriculture and Contracted Consultants, Crow LLP, are scheduling listening sessions for the agricultural community about the experiences with regulatory reporting requirement and process. The listening session will be virtual or hybrid in Sacramento. CDFA, in collaboration with the California Environmental Protection Agency and State Water Resources Control Board, are working with Crow to evaluate agriculture's food safety and water quality regulatory reporting requirements as part of an effort to streamline the administrative process and optimize information collected by the state. The California Department of Agriculture currently has an availability poll on their website. They are seeking to find out what the best day and time is for the upcoming sessions. Cotton Incorporated is conducting a natural resource survey with all U.S. cotton producers. The survey will guide Cotton Incorporated's future research priorities and help document U.S. cotton production improvements. The online survey should take about 25 to 35 minutes to complete. Dr. Jesse Daystar, Vice President and Chief Sustainability Officer at Cotton Incorporated, said it's all about telling the story and shaping the future of cotton research. The feedback will help to guide Cotton Incorporated research directives over the coming years. The environmental data will be used in aggregate form to show off the progress that cotton growers have made at becoming more efficient and sustainable over the years. A similar version of the survey was previously administered in 2008 and 2014. For more information and to take the survey, log on to cottoninc.com/agsurvey. In a significant step towards fostering research and development in the state, the Odisha government has recently signed two crucial memorandums of understanding with prestigious institutions, the University of California, Berkeley, and Frost & Sullivan. The MOU was inked with the University of California, Berkeley, and aims to facilitate cooperation in various areas, including research, impact assessment of schemes, entrepreneurship, and exchange of academic publications. The partnership is set to pave the way for joint research projects, conferences, workshops, and training sessions in cutting-edge domains. High-tech training workshops are anticipated to benefit around 1,000 researchers, enabling them to contribute to transformative developments in Odisha. Additionally, the collaboration opens up opportunities for the state government to tap into UC Berkeley's impressive alumni network, facilitating further collaboration on various initiatives. In the initial phase of this collaboration, pilot projects in crucial sectors such as disaster management and climate control, healthcare, fintech, and agriculture will be launched. Additionally, exploring emerging technologies like artificial intelligence, machine learning, and generative AI for governance systems promises to revolutionize public service delivery mechanisms. Further, the partnership envisions the implementation of joint initiatives like student exchange programs, startup exchange programs, and startup acceleration programs, fostering an atmosphere of innovation and growth. The Odisha government delegation, led by Minister Tushar Kanti Behera, also held significant meetings with prominent leaders from Amazon, Apple, Stanford University, and others.
What a difference a year makes. Last year, because of the drought, George Tibbetts received only a few inches of water, not enough to really do much with. He usually farms rice and other row crops near Arbuckle in Reclamation District 108, a federal water contractor that receives water from Lake Shasta. But this winter's rain filled most of the state's reservoirs and meant growers like Tibbetts received full water deliveries.
Last year, we were allocated in our water district what amounted to be a 10% supply. And it didn't make sense to use that 10% to grow rice because we couldn't grow many acres of that rice. So we allocated that water to a tenant farmer who grew tomatoes under drip irrigation. And we were able to have two fields of tomatoes last year on the farm. That left me out as a farmer with zero rice. I did have one field of sunflowers that we can grow dry land. I was able to eke out a little water for one irrigation under drip irrigation. And I did have a small field of organic wheat that I had planted the year before that we harvested in June of last year or July. And that didn't need any irrigation after March. So I was able to harvest that wheat field. So it wasn't a complete bust, but I missed growing rice, which I've been doing for close to 30 years. And it's a pleasant change of pace from a year ago to have full production this year. We have four fields in rice on the farm this year.
Tibbetts said last winter, growers were told it would take several years to refill the reservoirs and to expect reduced water deliveries this season. Calling it a pleasant surprise, he said all of the major water storage facilities filled, and they're still well above average for this time of year. And that bodes well for next season, too.
So I'm in Reclamation District 108, RD 108, and we received the full allocation, as did virtually all water districts that I'm aware of. And that's much more than we had hoped for. I was told last fall that if we had even normal rainfall over last winter, that wouldn't do much to replenish things, and we would have been pretty much in the same boat again this year, even with normal rainfall. But as everyone knows, we had way more than normal rainfall and tremendous snowpack, and we made up all the ground we had lost. We went to full production. We're above normal right now in storage in the major reservoirs that we use in California, Oroville and Shasta. I rely on Lake Shasta, and it's right now it's about 90% full here towards the end of July. And I think it's by 110 or 115% above normal. So not only has this gotten us through this year easily, but we're in good shape for next year. With normal rainfall, we'll have full production next year. And even if it's another dry winter, I don't think they would cut us off completely. We would still be able to farm some of our acres.
With a dim outlook last winter, Tibbetts said he hadn't made many planting plans for this season, but he said Mother Nature took care of things and he's back to farming his full acreage.
I didn't really plan much because I thought that was too much to hope for. We were planning on a reasonable hope of at least normal to more than normal rainfall, and that we would be able to scale back up and have partial production. So I was pessimistic. So I wasn't planning on being able to farm much this year, to be honest with you. I thought it was going to be a several year stretch before we worked our way back up to having normal water in our reservoirs. So it was just a blessing. Didn't plan on it. Mother Nature took care of us this year.
Wet spring conditions delayed rice planting, but Tibbetts said other factors delayed it too that he doesn't fully understand. On his own farm, they were about a week later than usual. As rice planting moves past May, yields typically go down because the plant doesn't have enough time to fill and ripen all of the kernels.
There is a lot of rice that went in late this year. There's a lot of reasons for that. It's more than just the late spring we had. And I don't understand all the reasons, to be honest with you, why so much rice went in late. On our own farm, we ended up being about a week later to get everything planted than I would have been in a normal year. But I'm fortunate to have several tractors and my son working with me on the farm and my dependable right-hand man. So when we were finally ready to go, we really pushed the envelope and worked some, you know, long days, 7 days a week to get the crop planted. We try and get it planted by May 15th. We like to have our first field planted on May 1st and get everything done by May 15th. And I didn't get the first field planted till May 8th, I think it was. And our last conventional field was planted on May 15th. And then I'm toying with organic rice this year. And we did that last. I didn't get that planted until May 25th, a bit later than normally one would like. But still, I've heard of a lot of rice going in June, which is not unheard of. But nobody wants to plant it that late because you know you've cut into your growing season a bit when you plant that late. So you would expect less yields.
So far this season, he said his conventional rice fields look good. He made his first herbicide application shortly after planting, and it kept competing weeds at bay. What has him a bit concerned is the deep, dark green color of the rice. He even cut back on fertilizer this year since the fields weren't planted last year. His field of organic rice doesn't look nearly as good. Tibbetts said the field hadn't been in rice for 30 years, but the dormant weed seeds came to life once rice was planted.
My organic rice looks horrible. It's full of weeds, and I'm disappointed about that. I hadn't had that field in rice in 30 years, and I thought the weed pressure would be light, and I think I was naive. It just shows me how long some of those weed seeds can stay in the soil. And I'm talking about aquatic weeds that we don't see, you know, normally in the rotation we had in that organic field. My conventional rice, I have to tell you, it looks beautiful. We had good weather after planting that allowed us to get our first herbicide treatment on a few days earlier than normal, and it worked much better. I learned a big lesson about how important it is to get that first application on early this year because my fields are very clean. I think that's due to getting the herbicides on early, but it could also be due to the fact that we were fallow last year. But I don't think so. I think from what I learned about how long weed seeds can survive in the soil, I think 1 year fallow didn't make it much of a difference to them. So my fields are very clean. I'm very happy with that. And a very deep, dark green color. And I'm suspicious about that. We had a very cool June. And the last time my rice looked this good, it was about 5 or 6 years ago, I think. And I remember thinking, wow, what's the best looking rice crop I've ever had? And when I went to harvest it, the yields were a bit below average. And I kind of learned a hard lesson about counting your chickens before they hatch. And I'm looking at my fields this year, and the same thing resonates with me. It looks too good. What's going on here? Why is it such a dark, beautiful green? Normally, I would say that it's well fertilized and has the makings of a great crop, but I'm not going to count those chickens. I'm going to wait till harvest time and see what we have.
In addition to rice, Tibbetts has a field of sunflowers for hybrid planting seed. Growing the seed involves planting rows of female plants next to male plants, and the bees cross-pollinate them. Before harvest, the males must be removed so they don't contaminate the female planting seed. Much like his rice, he said the sunflowers were planted a bit later than he would like.
I do have one field of sunflowers that we grow a lot of sunflowers for planting seed in California. California has a great reputation for producing high quality sunflower planting seed that seed companies come to California and then we grow their hybrid sunflower seed, you know, specific male and female crosses. And we harvest that planting seed and the seed companies clean it and bag it and send it all over the world for other farmers to plant to grow sunflowers for oil. And our field, it also went in a bit late towards the end of April. I like to get it in early April. We're just finishing irrigation and the bees are about done. The pollination's about done. So we'll go in next week and chop down the males. We don't want any, when we harvest, we don't want any contamination of the male seed in with the males. And we're on schedule for harvesting sunflowers maybe towards the end of August or early September.
Tibbetts said he expected to begin harvesting his rice toward the end of September, a bit later than usual. It will only be then that he'll know whether his concerns about the crop looking too good were warranted or whether the crop actually is that good. Let's hope the looks weren't deceiving. This is Vicki Boyd reporting for My Ag Life.
We're waking up to a new dawn in agriculture, a better way, where farmers stop working the soil and start working with it. At Huma, our carbon-rich, humate-based products improve soil health and fertility, deliver nutrients more efficiently, and reduce crop input costs. Welcome to Humic Solutions with a human touch. Visit huma.us to learn more.
Retail food prices increased 4.8% in the first 6 months of 2023, lower than the rate of mid-year inflation in 2022 of 8.2%. USDA's Economic Research Service reports the 20-year average for mid-year inflation from 2002 to 2021 was 1.6%. All food categories except for sugar and sweets experienced smaller price increases through the first half of 2023 compared with the same period in 2022. Prices for eggs increased the most at 13.7% so far in 2023, followed by fats and oils and cereals and bakery products. All food categories increased in price in the first 6 months of 2023 compared to 2022, but the increases for meats, fresh fruits, fish, and seafood, as well as fresh vegetables, were below their historical average price increases. Inflationary pressures and trends differ by food category. Prices will continue to change during the remainder of 2023, according to USDA, and may affect the annual inflation rate. Is food price inflation finally starting to stabilize? USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford has the story.
The latest Ag Department food price forecast may have some good news for food shoppers. Economists say we may see very little in the way of price hikes for the rest of the year. Now, so far this year, average grocery store food prices have already gone up 4.8% from a year ago, and the forecast for all of 2023?
4.9% growth.
Agriculture Department economist Matt McLaughlin says if that forecast holds, of course, that would mean
continued slow to negative pricing. Increases. So we are not expecting prices to rebound in the latter half of the year, but rather continue that zero to incremental decline that we've seen for the last few months.
In two of the last 4 months, grocery store food prices have registered small monthly declines. Matt says it doesn't mean that prices for all foods will go down. He says shoppers, for example, could see more price hikes for beef in the coming months because of smaller supplies of cattle. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Growth Energy recently filed an amicus brief in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit in the San Antonio Refinery, LLC, versus U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. The case pertains to a group of refineries seeking to avoid complying with the renewable fuel standard, which requires oil refiners to blend a specific amount of biofuels into their fuel each year. The petitioning refineries allege that the EPA's alternative RIN retirement schedule for small refineries, an adjustment made to allow refineries to meet their RFS obligations over an extended period of time, did not go far enough and should have allowed the refineries not to comply with the RFS at all. Growth Energy's amicus brief reiterates the fact that the oil industry continues to look for ways to avoid complying with the RFS. Growth Energy CEO Emily Skor says the oil industry should stop playing the victim and get on board with the most successful climate policy enacted to date. New data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture shows consumer food spending habits are changing over time. Farm News reporter Michael Clements.
USDA's Economic Research Service's Food Expenditure Series shows consumer spending preferences are changing. Danny Munch, American Farm Bureau Federation economist, says most notably, food away from home spending has exceeded food at home spending.
Spending away from home surpassed food at home spending by over $300 million last year, the largest gap ever. Biggest categories there are full service restaurants at about 34% of spending away from home and quick service restaurants at about 34% of food away from home. Food sold at merchandise stores and vending machines have gone up, the largest increase for food spending away from home.
Munch says there are many ways consumers are changing how they purchase food.
Traditionally, grocery stores consistently captured the largest market share of what people were purchasing to eat at home. That percentage has gone down significantly. So, for instance, in 1999, grocery stores accounted for 72% of all at-home expenditures. Last year, that had dropped down over the course of 25 years to 50% of at-home spending. Much of that decline was because of the growth of warehouse clubs and supercenters and home delivery.
Munch says there are regional differences in the data as well.
So, for instance, in rural Northeast states like New Hampshire and Maine, food costs on average are already higher than the rest of the country. But because they have such high rural populations, folks eat at home more often, so they spend more money on food at home versus places like Hawaii, Nevada, which has Las Vegas, and Florida, where there's much more tourism happening and people spend a lot more money away from home. I mean, it's important for farmers to be aware of these changes because it influences how their products are ultimately sold.
Learn more on the market intel page at FB.org. Michael Clements, Washington.
The American Carbon Alliance is a new coalition coming together to talk about the benefits of carbon capture technology. The group is led by Chief Executive Officer and Executive Chairman Tom Bias, former CEO of Growth Energy and President of the National Farmers Union. He says the alliance was formed to talk about the benefits of the technology to everyone in rural America.
From the farmers that grow the corn to the ethanol producers and the communities that these plants reside in. Oftentimes the debate has been about a lot of emotional issues and not necessarily about the benefits. So we created an alliance, and this alliance is to bring in everybody and anyone who's involved in the carbon capture industry in rural America to talk about these benefits. We just want them to be part of the debate, not exclusively based on emotional issues.
He talks about some of the specific benefits that carbon capture offers to rural America.
It lowers the carbon index for the production of ethanol, and the production of ethanol then qualifies for any future fuels. Sustainable aviation fuel, for example, is a potential 100 billion gallon market worldwide, and the airline companies are all under the gun to reduce their carbon score, and ethanol won't qualify as a feedstock to produce sustainable aviation fuel unless we get our carbon index down.
Bias says a lot of carbon exits an ethanol plant through its smokestack. It is processed and compressed and then is shipped through pipelines to areas of the country where it has some structure to be able to be put into the ground and capped and kept forever. I'm Lori Boyer. For more ag information, log on to agriculture.com. As Congress continues ramping up efforts to halt certain foreign investments in U.S. agriculture, the U.S. Senate has added language to its defense spending bill that would prevent people or businesses from China, Iran, North Korea, and Russia from buying U.S. farmland and agricultural businesses. The amendment, which has several provisions, passed the Senate on a 91-7 vote and will be added to the Senate version of the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2024. The language is similar to provisions that have been added to multiple House bills this year, including the funding bill for USDA, which the House could vote on at any time. An extensive heat ridge has spread across the United States this week with unseasonably hot weather. Already, we have seen several days the temperatures nearing or exceeding the 100-degree Fahrenheit mark for the Southwest and Plains, and that includes areas close to the Mississippi River and across the Gulf Coast for the next few days as well. Extreme heat at this time of the year is incredibly stressful for corn and soybeans in their most vulnerable stages of development during pollination and early grain fill. In addition, it's also stressful for livestock, especially those in open feedlots where winds are light, as well as for humans outside working their farms and ranches. This creates a tough time for large portions of the country's primary agricultural areas and is especially true when heat is consistent and extended.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.